In any given week here in Atlanta, you're about as likely to encounter a chamber ensemble performing at an art gallery or a club as you are a rock band. Wednesday, it's Sonic Generator. The group is the contemporary music ensemble in residence at Georgia Tech. Tom Sherwood is their percussionist and artistic director, and he stopped by WABE's studios to talk about their upcoming show at Terminal West. Can you talk about bringing chamber music, or bringing your brand of chamber music, to what's, I guess, a traditionally a rock venue?
Yeah, I mean, I just always really liked that space. I'm not sure how long it's been open, but I just remember when it was open that I was like, that would be a great space for chamber music. It's got a smallish stage, and it's not really huge. And for chamber music, you're not going to attract. I mean, if we had 300 people for a chamber music concert, it's like a great, fantastic turnout, And so in a space like that, if it was something smaller, more intimate crowd, it would still feel nice. And if it was bigger, it could suit that as well. But the neat thing about it too is it has neat's the right word, but it's got a bar in it and a restaurant tied to the place as well, which I don't know. Sonic plays a lot of, mostly what we do is contemporary music, and I don't know if that, I mean, it doesn't to me, but sometimes I think a lot of people approach that very seriously, and they might get uptight about it or something, and so I think having access to being able to drink and eat and in a more relaxing environment can just maybe help you approach the music in a different way that you might hear it and find it more enjoyable, or it just might turn you on in a different way.
Do you let the venue determine the repertoire, or does it matter?
I wouldn't say it totally determines the repertoire, but for instance, on this concert, we're doing two pieces that have video. And I think that's a really great thing to be able to do. I love playing with movies, and we did, one of our biggest projects we did was we played with the Fritz Lang Metropolis, and we screened it on the wall of the High Museum of Art. And at Terminal West, they were like, well, yeah, we've got a screen and a great projector. So in that regard, then it was like, oh, well, great, we could do this piece. And so we've got two pieces on the concert that have videos on them. So in that regard, yeah, but I mean, it might be that if the size of the stage is too small or too, then that might limit what we could fit on stage and program in that regard. But it's not normally that we're, the acoustics of the space. I mean, sometimes, if we were playing in like a particularly resonant area that would sound really great with a particular kind of music, I might pick a piece for that, but it's not too limiting one way or the other.
Yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like there's a new normal here in Atlanta as regards to chamber ensembles. There seems to be more of them now. There's groups like Bent Frequency, Chamber Cartel, the Clipper Jones Ensemble performing in a wide array of venues all over, not just traditional classical venues. Have you seen the classical and contemporary chamber music scene grow here in Atlanta since you've been
here? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And all those groups that you named are really focused more on the contemporary music. But then you have like the Atlanta Chamber Players and the Riverside and Peachtree String Quartet that mostly do more classical stuff. But they mix in modern music as well, and they try to play in different venues themselves. But absolutely, I mean, when I first got here, which was 16 years ago, there was Thamyris, was the new music ensemble. That was pretty much like the only group in town, and they've since dissipated and disappeared. And Bent Frequency came along, and Sana came along a little bit after that. And then, like I say, the Riverside and Peachtree String Quartet. So yeah, there's been a lot more growth in that, which is nice. I think chamber music's great. It's a lot more feasible to put on those kind of concerts because of the nature of them, the size of them.
Yeah. Do you think that accounts for the growth in the community?
I don't know. I mean, I think it definitely makes it more it makes it possible just financially and logistically to put on those concerts as opposed to like an orchestra concert. I think a lot of it too is just it's driven by the desire on the part of the musicians to have those experiences and to provide that music to the community. So it's just, it's more of an initiative on their part to just get it out there. And I think people respond to it if it's presented to them.
Yeah, so it's sort of a chicken and an egg thing, it seems. There are more musicians doing this kind of thing, and so there's more people who are interested in seeing
it.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. I mean, that's... I imagine that's the way it works, but... I know for me, like that's why I pretty much started Sonic, because I wanted to be a part of something like that. I wanted to play that music, and you know, I wasn't getting asked to play that music, or the opportunities weren't there, or there were pieces that like, man, I really like to play that piece of music, but you know, how are you going to do that, and where's the money going to come from, and so just the desire to do that sort of initiated that. You know, this group and everybody in the group wants to do that stuff as well. So
how long has Sonic Generator been around?
Since I was looking this up last night. Since 2006, which seems like a long time to me.
That does seem like a long time. That's an ice age in band years.
Yeah,
it's a long time.
Yeah.
So the group grew out of this desire to play this music that you guys weren't being asked to play otherwise. Mm-hmm. From that initial impulse, how has that developed over the years?
It started. My wife, she's a flute teacher, and Aaron Bobick was working for Georgia Tech. He was a professor at Georgia Tech, and his daughter was taking lessons with my wife at the time. And so we just got to talking about Georgia Tech and the scene there, and one thing led to another, and they were...
What was the scene like at Georgia Tech when you started?
Well, I mean, they have this, like, they have a ton of really brilliant, intelligent people there, but they don't you can't go there and like be a music major, but they have a ton of engineers that grew up playing instruments and are great instrumentalists but are going on to something else in their life. So it just looked like there was a vacuum there or a hole that could be filled with if we got those two forces together, if we could provide the artistic side of things and they could provide the technical and intellectual power. And that's kind of what we focused on as a group was always most of the pieces that we play involve technology in some way, even if it's just something, you know, as simple as playing along with a tape or, you know, a film, I mean, or something that's very complicated that you're actually processing sound, or playing along with, you know, the very first concert I played was, there was a robot drummer there that one of the tech professors had built, and then I remember, and it was made out of it was made out of wood. Like some of the body of it was made out of wood, and it had mechanical arms, and it played a drum, like this big tom-tom. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, like 5 years later, we played another version of something similar to this, and this time, like this robot had like evolved, and it would now had like this like it had just one giant like cycloptic eyeball, and it it had a head that popped up and down, and it kind of grooved to what you were playing, and it was playing a marimba now. It had four arms now instead of two.
Wow!
And it would improvise, you know, along with what you were doing. So So just and so like that, you know, seeing that kind of growth, but also just like I said, the project that we did with Metropolis. I mean, that was a really huge, expensive, just a mammoth project for us to mount. And I mean, nothing that I could have ever tried to put together early on. And it was sort of just like building up your muscles to figure out how to, you know, we had to bring in people from Paris and, you know, and raise money for this and that. And Sonic, you know, last year we went to Paris we went to Metz actually and performed there. So it's just, it's definitely been growing in that regard. But this is sort of, this concert at Terminal West is kind of a return to just doing, you know, the more like meat and potatoes, kind of a smaller venue and just smaller pieces and less, you know, gargantuan projects, yeah. Because it's just kind of more enjoyable in some ways, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple of pieces that have a video projection. What can we expect to hear at the show?
Well, there's a piece by Steve Reich, and that's New York Counterpoint, which is a piece for clarinet and tape. Actually, I was just, I just noticed, like, I think it was 2 days ago or 3 days ago was the 50th anniversary of Steve Reich's, his first published or official piece of music, which was called It's Gonna Rain. And it's a recording of this, a preacher on a street and on a curb in San Francisco. And he recorded this guy, and then he kind of took a few snippets of text from the speech, and he just looped it, and it started this whole process for him of where he went with it as a composer. And I thought that was amazing that was 50 years ago. I mean, that seems like 50 years in my mind seems so long, you know.
Yeah.
And the contemporary music world doesn't seem that long to me, but so that kind of blew me away, and I was really glad that. That we could program something of his, and because especially he's sort of Steve Reich is—he's one of the grandfathers of this whole style, this whole genre of music, really. So we have something by him. We have something by David Lang, which is a piece called "Cheating, Lying, Stealing," which I think is, well, it's amplified, but that's probably the easiest piece in the program as far as the technology goes. Everything else has like a tape part or some live processing.
But this one, what are the instruments involved?
Well, this one's for the whole ensemble, which is six of us plus Well, there's no flute in this, but there's a part for two percussion. There's two percussion parts in there that are supposed to be played by non-percussionists. I don't know why he calls for that, but so yeah, we've got her and actually we do have a percussionist playing the other part, but. Yeah, and this piece one of the pieces with the video is by this young kid, Daniel Wall, and he was born in Paris and he lives in Brooklyn now. We've done a bunch of work of his lately, and I don't know why. It just I really like the sound of his music, and it really blends. I think he's kind of heavily into like the electronic music scene, and so it really blends this electronic and organic world together.
Music that really that appeals to you, that makes you that was the thing that like grabbed you back before you started the group, that keeps you playing it.
Yeah, you know, I guess in some ways it's just the possibilities of it are just endless to me, and I get bored somewhat easily with listening to the same kind of stuff all the time, and there's just so many, especially just within, I mean, I'm not even talking about contemporary music, but just classical music in general. There's just like there's so many worlds to explore with it that it's endless. And I think particularly now with contemporary music, you like all the barriers just get sort of, you know, you can do whatever you want really. And then when you start adding in the electronic aspects to that opens up just a total whole other world to explore. And so I don't know, I just find it endlessly fascinating, and I find the music is it's beautiful, and it's I find it intellectually stimulating and artistically stimulating, so I don't know, I just never get tired of it.